This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Chattanooga 2.0 is a partnership among 150 organizations to advance equity and opportunity here in Hamilton County so that all children can reach their full potential. Its recent report to the community highlighted the past 5 years of progress on improving outcomes in birth-to-career education and workforce development, while looking ahead to new goals and challenges between now and the year 2030. Molly Blankenship is Executive Director of Chattanooga 2.0. Molly, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Ray. Appreciate it.
Looking back on the last 5 years for Chattanooga 2.0, what have we found?
We have found a lot, and I'm glad you asked. Chattanooga 2.0, I want to start just by being clear that we are a partnership of so many different organizations who are working together around a shared vision. So 5 years of work has not just been contained to one organization. It's been a community-wide effort and journey and movement. But what we found is that when we come together around challenges, we can achieve really amazing things. We can see progress and gains like what we've seen in public education, in early childhood, in higher education. I think we've also learned how important it is for us to work together around big, tough challenges our community faces. That's really the only way that we'll get there. That's been important.
This partnership has had to adjust to the pandemic like so many in the Chattanooga area.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And have been for almost a year now, which is hard to believe. But we did, like so many across the community, our staff and our partners pivoted quickly to address the really immediate needs that children and families were facing in light of the pandemic and did what we do best, pull people together to solve those challenges. And I think as a result, our community led in a lot of ways, both at a state level, at a national level. We moved to action quickly and led in our COVID response.
Talk to us more about the challenges and goals ahead as seen by Chattanooga 2.0.
As I said, I think 5 years of work, we've learned a lot, seen a lot of success. Just a great example is the unbelievable academic achievement and growth gains that we saw in K-12 education in 2019. So we've seen a lot of progress, but everywhere we look, there are still challenges. In early childhood, research shows just how beneficial early childhood programming is for all children, but especially children who are in poverty. And yet only 1 in 4 children in Hamilton County who are under 5 are currently enrolled in an early learning program. We continue to see, you know, lower academic achievement scores than we want to see for our K-12 students. And if you disaggregate those scores, if you look at them by race or economic status, then the picture gets even more bleak. And similar with post-secondary, we want to see more students successful in their post-secondary education. And that really begs the question around focusing on certain demographics and equity. So we're committing ourselves for the next decade to addressing those challenges and to building excellent and equitable education and workforce systems here in Hamilton County.
And what you're talking about is all part of the conversation when people talk about graduating from high school here and then not staying in the Chattanooga area.
Right. Absolutely. That's part of the work, too, is we can't just focus on creating ready graduates. It's a big part of the work. But we've also got to make sure that our economy is ready to receive them, that we have pathways to well-paying jobs here in Hamilton County, that we have a community that's sticky and keeps the high-quality, skilled talent that we're going to grow. So it takes both sides of that coin.
And also, as even before the pandemic, people were moving to the Chattanooga area from other parts of the country. And that wave has not diminished during the pandemic. It has only grown, not just to the Chattanooga area, but to Tennessee, to the Southeast and beyond.
Yeah, we were just looking at data from U-Haul showing how many U-Haul trucks are coming into Tennessee from other states. And I can just personally, you know, knowing realtors and living in the neighborhood that I do, I see California tags, Wyoming, Oregon. I think that we're continuing to grow and attract a really diverse group of folks of this community. And it makes sense. Great place to be.
And this also gets at what you were talking about before with equity. It's one thing to have people coming here from other parts of the country, bringing their talents and helping the economy to grow. But the equity piece of it is making sure that the growth is there for everybody.
That's exactly right. And I think that was the rallying cry that really served to launch Chattanooga 2.0, as we saw that our community was growing economically and progressing in all these ways, but our residents who were born and raised here were not being trained and credentialed to be able to enjoy it fully, to to reap the benefits of living here. And so that's really, I think, what we're designed to address, is make sure that everyone who is born in Hamilton County goes through our public education system, that they have a true opportunity at success and being a thriving member of our community and economy.
What are some things that we may see in the coming months, later this year, springboarding off of this latest report with the goals and challenges ahead over the next decade?
We have moved headstrong into implementation of this plan. That's where we're going. It's time to move from planning and talking about it into action, and that's what we're committed to doing. And I think that equity, we've been talking about that, right? Equity is really at the core of this plan and really at the core of the work. We know that we cannot achieve our overarching goals if we don't prioritize equity and closing equity gaps. So you'll see us convening partners to really dig deeper into equity, to understand the challenges, to develop recommendations and implement those across the cradle to career continuum. And I think, you know, we've got some immediate opportunities because of the crises that we've been dealing with this past year. And so we're going to continue to try to hit the gas pedal on fully closing the digital divide, make sure that students have access to devices and that we're a leader in remote learning, virtual learning, and then continuing to engage with out-of-school time providers and continuing to work on expanding early childhood access. We're working on all those big priorities and trying to move hard and fast to address some of the challenges and the opportunities.
And where can people go online to learn more and to keep up on the latest?
Sure. They can go to chat2.org, where they can learn more about our work and also download the report that we just released and figure out how they can get involved as well.
All right. Molly, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it.
This winter, learning new skills for the outdoors here in Chattanooga involves the virtual space. Sunshine Loveless is with Outdoor Chattanooga, part of the city's Department of Economic and Community Development. Sunshine, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tell us how Outdoor Chattanooga is operating at this time.
Yeah, we are in unique times, aren't we? But we've been here for almost a full year. So we are still primarily virtual. Online activities and events is kind of what we've turned to. Normally in the winter months, we'd be offering classroom-based winter workshops. This year, we have taught ourselves how to use technology, and we are now offering those online. Tuesday nights, biweekly, at 7 p.m., you can register in advance and join us to learn a new outdoor skill. So we started that series January 12th with Hiking 101. Upcoming, Camp Cooking 101 and Wilderness Survival Skills, How to Build a Shelter. That'll be on February 9th and February 23rd. And then rounding it up in March, we have Backpacking 101 and Basic Bike Maintenance, both on March 9th and March 23rd.
What are some of the challenges that you have faced in teaching all these outdoor skills and doing it in the virtual space?
Well, I think a lot of people had to quickly learn how to use technology more often than we had been. And for outdoor enthusiasts and active outdoor recreationists, we weren't that tech savvy, if you can imagine. So it took a little bit of an adjustment period to figure out how we can still instill appreciation for the outdoors while leaning on technology. And through a couple conferences that I attended, you can actually use technology to encourage outdoor recreation. There are things like Go Pokemon, which got a lot of people outside, right? There's these other apps that, like iNaturalist, encourage you to be a citizen-based scientist by taking pictures of plants, wildlife, uploading it to their database, and kind of showcasing the biodiversity that exists in particular regions. And that's a global website and app that can be used. And there's many more. There's kids in parks. There's all kinds of things that encourage people to get outside and play while using technology in the process. So it's one of the ways we've been doing that, as well as a lot of YouTube videos teaching skills, and then our virtual workshops, which we are testing out right now.
What response have you gotten so far?
Pretty amazing. I was pleasantly surprised. So our first one, Hiking 101, which seems pretty basic, but it is still intimidating for some people to get out and go hiking. So we just talked about the basics, things to think about, how to plan, how to use apps and or maps for navigation. And the biggest worry most people have is, I'm going to get lost, right? We had over 57 people register and over 30 actually sign on and participate, which was more than I'd hoped for. And the best part was we're not just reaching people within the Chattanooga zip code range. We were reaching people all the way into Canada, California, Minnesota. So by the nature of virtual reality, we've expanded and broadened our reach, which is pretty awesome, if you ask me.
Beyond the winter, what are you looking at for the spring? Subject, of course, to what we're all living through.
Yeah, so the hopes are that we will slowly see and continue to see those case numbers go down, and we can get back to whatever a sense of normalcy may be post-COVID. And we are planning to put more programs and activities on our calendar that will be in person. We want to get back to teaching intro to mountain biking. We would love to get back to archery. We're having a difficult time with that, so we're not offering that this winter because that typically is held indoors. But intro to mountain biking, we will be doing guided bike rides with the National Park Service again, which have always been very popular. We want to get back to doing guided hikes with people, maybe not offering the shuttle like we used to, but at least meeting them on site, maybe doing a loop and coming right back to where we started. But we are trying desperately to figure out how we can offer our rapid learning program again, which is that whitewater skills-based kayaking program. It's typically year-round, and we haven't been able to offer that for an entire year. So we are in the works of figuring out how to offer those things safely. And again, as those case numbers go down, vaccines go up, hopefully we can come back together in person and do that safely.
And where can people go online for more information?
OutdoorChattanooga.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Outdoor Chattanooga, Instagram, Outdoor Chat, Twitter, and YouTube now. So go find us, follow us, subscribe to us, and stay inspired to get outside and play.
All right. Sunshine, thanks so much.
Thanks. Appreciate you.
On Friday, our campus, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, hosts virtual festivities for its MLK Day 2021, featuring a poet and also the niece of the new Vice President of the United States. Chris Stokes is Assistant Director of UTC's Office of Multicultural Affairs.
We're excited about it. It's an annual day for us, but we're having to come forward in a different format. We're going all virtual this year. So it's really interesting for us. It's been a lot of work and shown a strong collaboration between our campus partners, and we're really excited to do that. We're going to have two speakers for this year's day, MLK Day 2021. We're going to have a speaker that's going to be here at our 11 o'clock hour, Alex the Great. She's an amazing, phenomenal poet, but she's going to come and she goes across the nation to college campuses, sharing her message, inspiration to youth, and just inspiring young people to follow their dreams. As a spoken word artist, she has been on the stage with various speakers, various people of notoriety, from musicians to actors and other noteworthy people in high recognition. So we wanted to bring her to our campus to share her message with the youth. So typically we would bring our high school students to the campus for about an hour or so before we had our larger speaker and allow them to engage with our campus community. But since we can't bring them here, we wanted to bring a special message to them. And so her message is going to be catered to our high school students and to our campus students, because she has a very dynamic words, a very strong, educated young woman with a powerful message of bringing realness, you know, truth, being authentic in who you are, and being able to overcome just adversity. And so in sharing that story, she brings a message of empowerment and resilience, and also just hope to young people. And so we wanted to share that specific message in this time with our young people to keep them inspired and keep them encouraged, because they've had so many transitions from going to all virtual classrooms and hybrid events, and their whole life has just been changed because of this. And so we wanted to inspire them and have something special for them and bring her to our campus virtually and make sure that they had a chance to connect with her. And then following her message, we'll have our annual keynote event with our MLK Day speaker. But instead of a just keynote message, we're going to have a moderated discussion followed by a Q&A. And this year we're having an amazing, dynamic, just powerhouse by the name of Mina Harris. She has just graced audiences across the nation with her message. She's a strong social media content creator. So if you follow her on social media, you'll hear her reference that she's a proud Harris woman. And she comes from a long line of women Some you may have heard of, one by the name of Kamala Harris.
Now the Vice President of the United States.
Yes, correct. And so she's her aunt, but her mother as well is just an amazing powerhouse out there. She's just been making a name for her. And coming from a family of so many dynamic women, she's been able to create her own space out there with her phenomenal woman brand. You know, she's a voice for women's equality, and across the lines of intersectionality, she's working to support equal representation and treatment for all. She's done amazing work. She's recognized on so many different levels, and we're just proud to have her here. So she's been instrumental in a lot of areas. She's a dynamic author, like I said, social media content creator. She's an entrepreneur. She's a lawyer. She has so many different facets to who she is. And she just is just a strong, strong voice for us as we come into 2021. And it's just amazing to hear her. We're excited to have her. And she's going to be sharing with our campus community as well as our local Chattanooga community.
And if people want to participate in this virtually, where can they go online to get more information?
They can visit utc.edu/MENA, MEENA dash Harris, HARRIS. And that's the place where you can actually register for the event as well as learn more about her. And for our earlier speaker, Alex the Great, utc.edu/ Alex, A-L-E-X, hyphen, T-H-A, hyphen, great, G-R-E-A-T.
All right. Chris, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for having us.
This week, the Photographic Society of Chattanooga opened its winter gallery in the showroom at Blackwell Automotive. The gallery's hours are Monday to Friday from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and the show runs through April 9th. Milton McLean is with the Photographic Society. Milton, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Tell us more about the gallery show.
The Photographic Society of Chattanooga has had a gallery location at the Blackwell Automotive Building in the Eastgate shopping area there. We've had it there for some 14 years, which we appreciate that opportunity. This is a showing of, we have many pictures that are local Chattanooga type scenes, but also our people travel, and so we have travel scenes from around the United States and internationally. The public's always welcome to come into the lobby there and see the pictures that are on display. They're there daily, Monday through Friday, during normal working hours. We have not been able to have our openings for the gallery because of the COVID situation. We're missing that.
How are you operating this during this time?
Well, it has been a challenge for us because as many organizations, we aren't able to have our regular club meetings, which normally are a monthly meeting. So we simply are able to still have this location, which we very much appreciate Richard and Richmond Blackwell for working with us on that and offering their lobby space to present these pictures. We normally have anywhere from 35 to 50 pictures hanging in that lobby. They're all titled and displayed. This is an open gallery, so while normal COVID practices are maintained, you still are welcome to come in at any time, walk through, and see the pictures hanging there.
And again, tell us more about the pictures. Do any of them reflect what we have all lived through in the past year?
I think the pictures are primarily local scenes, nature, wildlife scenes, some winter scenes. Hopefully it's more of an uplifting type view to see. And many are Chattanooga, the local area, by local photographers that are our members, amateur and professionals.
And then beyond the show, what plans do you have as we head into the spring?
We certainly hope to be able to resume having our regular club meetings, which are normally the third Thursday of every month. We have a website ongoing, which is chattanoogaphoto.org. Well, people can connect to us there and see what's going on. We have a monthly newsletter hopefully we'll be able to resume having normal activities of meetings and presentations and outings. We normally have monthly outings during the year to various locations, but needless to say, that's just not possible right now.
And again, the website for more information?
ChattanoogaPhoto.org.
All right. Milton, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots, talking writing. Our guest is poet, naturalist, and essayist, Ray Zimmerman.
The Dance of Leaves. The breeze stirred every leaf on the tree. They shifted hues as the gentle wind flipped them this way and that. Dressed in autumn colors, they prepared to fall, but time declared that they would have a few more days. I imagined how Henry David Thoreau might have nodded and written a thoughtful essay. Thoreau was not there. Nor was Walt Whitman, who might have danced with the leaves, turning one way and then another. He would celebrate their electric bodies and their changing colors in a carnal proclamation of all humanity. St. Francis might have rung a bell, as he is said to have done, for the rising moon. Startled citizens of Assisi left their beds to come running in search of a fire. They went home angry when he explained that it was only the moon. They grumbled, as did neighbors of Van Gogh when his madness became unbearable. He might have painted those leaves on canvas, surrounding each leaf with swirls of color to simulate the motion in the style of his Starry Night. I could not imagine what Terry Tempest Williams, spokeswoman of desert canyons where trees are few and far between, might say. She might have searched the tree for evidence of an owl's nest or remembered cottonwoods swept away in a flash flood. She might have used them as a metaphor for recent losses in the world of conservation. The loss of most of the Bears Ears National Monument prompted her to contemplate undoing and write a book titled Erosion. Annie Dillard would likely pick a single leaf to examine. She might describe how the vein structure resembled a network of trails through the woods, the spots indicating that some decomposer was already at work on the leaf would certainly get her attention, just as a deflating frog at Tinker Creek once moved her to an intricate essay that only gave us the cause at the end. She lived in a cabin on Tinker Creek, and Edward Abbey once christened her the heir to Thoreau. I shot a video that did not do justice to the leaves and their changing colors. I wished I could see the world with the eye of one of the great thinkers and felt desolation for my humble craft. Then I remembered an old friend who said that imagination is the most powerful of nations. I traveled widely in that nation. The first stop was easy. I rang a bell in celebration of St. Francis. The second step required time travel. I became a fly on the wall of Van Gogh's room and watched him painting his Starry Night. At Walden Pond, I became a kingfisher. Thoreau paused from hoeing his rows of beans and nodded. Perhaps he was contemplating trips on the nearby river or out to Cape Cod. Then I flew down to New York. Whitman did not notice me as he swam among the bathers. I wondered which edition of his one great book of poems he was working on. I wished I had read his prose work, Specimen Days, as well as Leaves of Grass. I journeyed to the Red Rock Desert of the American West and took the form of a raven. High on a bluff, I saw Terry Tempest Williams instructing some desert writers. After making a particularly powerful point, she howled like a coyote as described in her book, An Unspoken hunger. In the form of a heron, I saw Annie Dillard at Tinker Creek. A frog in the stream deflated, exactly as described in her book. The attacking giant water bug swam away. Imaginings completed, I returned to the tree. Days had elapsed. The leaves had fallen.
Thanks, Ray. Our guest is Ray Zimmerman, poet, and as you can tell from that, essayist. So I thought it might be kind of fun to just wander through this essay and, and the heroes that you've identified.
Sure.
So should we start with Walt Whitman?
Walt Whitman, yeah. I guess Walt Whitman is the convenient answer when people ask, where did free verse come from? Because he established free verse in America, although he was probably influenced by a French form called vers libre, which means free verse. So he may have known about that, but his work was not well received when he first published it. One critic suggested that he go hang himself. Another said that it was like an explosion in a sewer. But after years of his writing being around and promotion, it actually got popular pretty quickly. It did not achieve what he thought it would achieve, because he wrote a lot about workmen and common people, and he pictured people reciting that poem as they went out to hoe their bean field and plow their land, and that didn't happen, but it did catch on.
What did he think that they would take from his poetry?
Just the fact that he was an everyday poet and he celebrated the life of the common man.
So he wanted to
and woman.
Sort of elevate them a little bit in their minds by elevating them on the page.
Yeah, and he was very big on equality of genders. You know, he said, you know, and he talks about man, and he says, and woman too, and goes through more about why women are important. And
which is pretty cool, you know. I mean, it may not be relevant, but he was gay, right?
Right.
I don't know if that made him more or less sensitive.
Either gay or bisexual, nobody's really sure, but that may have played into that answer, into his answer to what life is all about, which is what any poet is doing. You know?
What drew you to Walt Whitman?
His free verse and just the common people. The common people.
Was that your first exposure to free verse when you read his stuff?
I think so. Maybe not, but I think so. It impressed me because the first time I read that book, Leaves of Grass, I thought it was just one long poem. Mm. I didn't realize that there were several poems there. But it does read as if it were all one long piece of one long cloth. I celebrate myself a single solitary person. That's a very important statement to me. We all have to come to terms with who we are, and we have to celebrate that, and then we see where we go from there.
I like the idea that we contain multitudes too.
Every person contains multitudes.
There's some comfort in that, you know?
In some cases, that's diagnosed as an illness. When they let them all come out at different times, so I guess.
I guess we do tend to privilege self-discipline in that sense, don't we?
It's hard to separate him from Thoreau, because Thoreau influenced me early on with his essays, Civil Disobedience, and I really liked his book Cape Cod more than Walden. And that one was not published during his lifetime. His sister posthumously published it. But they were of the same era, and both would have amounted to less than what they amounted to if it had not been for Emerson, who continuously said, we need an American art form in literature. We need to stop imitating those Europeans. We aren't Europeans anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because it seems to me that Whitman particularly is quintessentially American.
Yeah.
The energy in his writing and the expansiveness.
Yeah. His first poem in Leaves of Grass goes on for 80 pages, and I can almost picture him reading the whole thing in one breath. It just doesn't stop. It just keeps going and going.
He's like a 19th century version of Jack Kerouac in some ways.
In some ways. He was a great hero to the beat poets, I believe.
I can see why, yeah.
Particularly Ginsberg. He wrote a poem about Whitman. Maybe because they were both gay. I don't know. That could have played in.
Well, I think they probably had a philosophical commonality too, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. And I think the thing I like about Whitman is he just celebrates. He celebrates life, and he celebrates
very positive.
The people, and he celebrates the land. And the land is central to my ethos and being.
Well, among the various titles that you have, one calls you a park ranger and a naturalist.
Which I've been, yeah. Yeah, I've worked.
In some ways, that seems to me to be at the center of who you are. That everything you do, you know, whether it be vice president of the Writers Guild or the freelance journalism that you do, the essays that you write, your poetry, it all seems to be much of you, as you've just said about Whitman, a kind of celebration of the natural world.
Yeah, the natural world. Without the landscape, I would be very lost. Mm. You know, if I ever someday have to move into a retirement home, I hope there's windows.
So do I. Okay. I can't imagine. That's rather like putting a wild bird in a cage.
Yeah, I'd say so. I didn't in that essay mention any of the haiku poets, but I count them as influence, particularly Basho. His book, Narrow Road to the Interior, is just, it's, as he says, in tune with the four seasons. And it's very nature poetry. I think he wrote what's considered the quintessential haiku in the 17th century. Old pond, a frog jumps in, the sound of water.
It is a lot like those Japanese pen and ink paintings, isn't it? Just the essence, just the yeah. There's so much you can fill in just from those images.
Yeah, and in fact, as an author, Stephen Addist wrote a book called The Art of Haiku, and he includes not just the poems, but artwork done by those haiku masters, because a lot of them did a drawing to accompany a haiku. Now, the combined form is called haiga. And the drawing is done with the same calligraphy pen that was used to write the haiku. As we break a haiku into three lines in Japanese, it's one vertical line. And so there's plenty of room on the other side of the page to make a drawing.
Well, one of the things, one of the aspects of your essay that I particularly like is, and maybe it's because I know you're a poet, that it reads as a poet writing prose. And in common with the haiku writers, I think that poetry is the art of distilling something to the essence.
And making sure that it has a specific rhythm to it. And well-written essays have to be rhythmic, too.
There's almost stanzas in this essay with, you know, each personality is a new start in some sense.
I didn't do it as a poem. I have written some poems that have morphed into essays. But
what about the other way around?
Occasionally. I wrote an essay about a rattlesnake once that turned into a poem. was eventually published as a poem.
It seems to me that maybe that's the easier way to go than the other way, where you start with a poem and then try to expand it to an essay. It seemed to me that you've already said all you wanted to say in the poem, so how would you expand it, except by adding more detail, I guess?
Yeah, I don't know. Someone said poems are never finished, just abandoned. I think it was a famous French poet that said that. I can't remember his name.
That would seem to stand for any creative work, you know?
Yeah, but I guess when a poem turns into an essay, I finish it and realize that it was an essay all along. You know, I read it and it doesn't read like a poem. It reads like prose with line breaks. That's not poetry. So it has to be prose.
I think that's why many of us find writing poetry so challenging.
Knowing where to put the line breaks is essential.
And how to distill your ideas into such, you know, sharp and clearly delineated images, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's hard to do.
So, yeah. Well, we talked about a couple of my heroes.
We did. I was coming to St. Francis. Aside from the obvious connection, I was wondering what it was about St. Francis that drew you.
One of his pieces called The Canticle of Brother Sun. And it's just a continuous hymn of praise, but he's grabbing images out of nature. He says, "Praise be you, our Father, through our brother Sun, and sister Moon, and sister Mother Earth, who sustains and governs us." That kind of writing, those images just appealed to me.
Mm. So romantic.
I suppose so. There are some theologians who say that all nature praises the Creator, and some who say that all of creation groans for renewal. And I tend to agree with them. I don't think there's a writer that's anything like Saint Francis since he put pen to paper.
And that was what, 12th century?
Something like that. Mm. Way back. I heard he walked to the Vatican through the snow in bare feet. That's not something I want to replicate.
Me either.
Yeah. I think I just threw him in there because of the swirling motion in that picture. Starry Night.
Yeah, I was wondering about poor old Vincent, and you talk about, you know, how his neighbors, in fact, for that matter, his brother, responded to him as he became more and more, I don't know what the word is exactly, sort of out of touch. I don't think he was necessarily nuts, but, I think he was
stressed. Well, it's interesting.
Stressed.
Because he continued to paint while he was in the asylum.
Mm.
Yeah, which I suppose he found a solution that worked for him there. I don't know how well it worked. I think what I've read, his life sounds like it was painful. And then I put in two moderns, and they are heroes of mine, Annie Dillard and Terry Tempest.
Well, before we leave Vincent van Gogh, it strikes me that's almost like... painted poetry.
Mm. It could be. Mm. Yeah. I can't say anything more about that. It sounds like an interesting idea, though.
Terry Tempest Williams is perhaps, of all the people you reference in this essay, the one who doesn't have as wide, perhaps, a reputation as some of the others?
Perhaps. Although she's published a lot of books.
She has a large readership. You know, I don't know anything about I don't know very much about naturalist writers. That's probably part of the reason for that.
Nature writers are a whole group apart, and Yeah, she is almost entirely in that school. Some of her work is political in an environmentalist sense.
She's from Utah?
Yeah, she's from Utah, and some of her work is political in terms of rebelling against the Mormon Church, of which her father was an elder. That had to be an interesting family because she's teaching at the University of Utah, teaching in the environmental humanities program, and she was a naturalist at the State Museum of Natural History. Her dad was a third generation pipeline contractor. And her brothers all worked in the family business.
So she's a bit like a Yankee in the court of King Arthur.
Yeah, well, they must have had some interesting discussion.
I can't imagine to be surrounded with people who are so philosophically opposed to everything that you write about and that you care about, you know?
Well, sort of. But, I mean, her brothers and her dad were all outdoors people, hunters, fishermen, hikers. So they had some points of commonality. But I think
so there's this kind of pragmatic, poetic balance in her family, huh?
Yeah, I suppose. I wasn't there, so I can't say for sure.
Is she a contemporary of yours?
She's probably close age wise, yeah.
Which I guess is true of Annie Dillard also.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting to think about that. I read them as role models, but mm-hmm. they're probably in close to my age, maybe younger.
Well, Annie Dillard, I guess, has in common with Thoreau that she's from New England, right?
Yeah, and she writes a bit about nature, but she's really considered philosophical, theological, particularly not her book. Well, her book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, is, but more so the next couple of books after that, Teaching a Stone to Talk. and I can't remember the title of that short one. It's all about fire, though, and people. And one person who was burned in a fire and a moth that got caught in a candle flame. And I was wondering where she was going with that, but it ends well.
Are you attracted to her spirituality?
I like any spirituality in writing. Hers is a different variety than my own. My own tends to be more traditional.
You're a Protestant?
Pardon?
Are you a Protestant?
Yeah, Methodist. So, I'm probably, you know, a little out on the edge for my fellow Methodists, but it's you just have, you come to terms with what you believe, and that's that.
Well, I wanted to open the conversation, as I said, by, you know, using your essay as a way for you to talk about what you do, and if it's okay with you, we'll take the second half of the conversation and concentrate on your poetry. And mm-hmm. if you'd like to read some of your poetry, we can talk about it.
That sounds delightful.
Well, I tell you what, we have enough time today for one poem, if you care to read one.
Yep, okay. Okay, this is Sonnet 3. I've written 3 sonnets, and this is the third one. So does the drought give birth to quenching rain, as heat of day recedes with cooler night. The Arctic bear from northern sky takes flight. With darkness ended, sun must rise again. The turquoise sky aflame with salmon red, as clouds leap fish-like from the eastern rim. Across the watery sky we see them skim. When evening comes, the turquoise blue has fled. As thirsty people cry for quenching rain, the leaves of trees like paper scorched by sun. The heat-parched winds must cross the dusty plain. Dry ferns uncurl like newfound life begun. The soul revives where once despair had lain, and seeds shall sprout as life must have its run.
Back to what you were talking about before, the endless cycle, huh?
Well, yeah, I wrote that near the beginning of the COVID epidemic, or pandemic, I should say. And I think people need hope. So it talks about despair and it talks about hope. Hope is always with us. I think that was published in the Avocet, which is a small, little-known literary journal out of Fountain Hills, Arizona.
I think for many people, the pandemic has been an opportunity to reinvent, to, you know, think about all of the things that we take for granted, and not to stretch the metaphor too much, but the notion of rebirth. In some sense, this pandemic seems almost Darwinian.
Yeah, that could be. It could be. It's been interesting how poetry has changed. Sales of poetry books almost universally depend on readings, and you can't do public readings now, and you can't do open mics, except now they've gone online. So, you know, the Chattanooga Writers Guild has an open mic that's not limited to poetry. There's fiction and prose, fiction and nonfiction prose. So, and those are recorded and put on the Facebook page so people can hear them later and people can hear about your book and possibly buy it. The good side, the upside to that is that I have met more poets in other parts of the world over the past few months than I had met in the rest of my lifetime. I participate in one open mic that's organized by a person up in Nashville. It used to take place in a coffee shop, so it was called Poetry in the Brew. And now Poetry in the Brew is an online open mic with participants in Los Angeles and Arizona and Nashville and Chattanooga and Maine and the UK and a couple in Australia where it's tomorrow morning. So, you know, it's all, you know, I would never have been heard by poets in those other locations. And I would never have heard their work. And I participate in another one that's now that's based out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. So I've heard a lot of work by Wyoming and Colorado poets and West Coast. There are some West Coast folks in that one. So it's interesting that, you know, there's becoming this network.
I think it's one of the major upsides of something that's been a universal curse. There's not anybody on the planet, it seems, at this point, who hasn't been touched by this pandemic, you know. If we might, I'd like to continue our conversation next week. Our guest is naturalist, poet, and essayist, Ray Zimmerman. This is Scenic Roots, Talking Writing.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.